You have those squibs attached to these people who are being shot in some of the reddest blood you're ever going to see and some of the tallest squib heights you're going to see. They get shot and then their insides just come out.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Tun, and I'm here with my co-host, Mike Messina. Today, we are doing Black History Month, three movies. We're breaking them down. So, Mike, do you want to go through the movies here?
Yeah, sure. So we're going to be going through Black Panther, The Last Dragon, and Django Unchained, three favorites of ours.
Definitely. And I think I wasn't too well-versed on The Last Dragon, but I took a look and it's amazing.
Yeah, I was writing an article about Black culture and Asian culture, where they intersect, and Kung Fu films were a big part of that. And Last Dragon was a huge example of sort of the Black community taking from the Asian community and helping that express their own culture through an Asian lens. Really cool stuff. We'll get into it, of course.
We'll definitely get into it, yeah. All right, I guess let's start ourselves off with Black Panther then. Let's go into this casino fight.
It's now or never.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Hi.
So, Black Panther, 2018 Marvel superhero movie, of course, starring Chadwick Boseman, RIP to Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther.
Yes. Yep.
The casino fight. And just my thoughts overall on the movie. It's, of course, at this point, it's become a cultural icon, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was the ninth highest grossing film of all time or something crazy like that. I know Marvel has basically half of the top five list for highest grossing films.
Yeah, it was a great movie. Really quotable lines.
Oh, yeah.
I would say,
totally.
Like all Marvel movies, but this one in particular, I do remember a lot.
I'm not going to lie, and this might be sacrilege for an action filmmaking podcast. I feel like my favorite parts of Black Panther, though, weren't the action scenes. It was all the character and the politics and the themes that were underlining the whole thing. There were two characters in particular, I think, that were stealing the show. Michael B. Jordan was one of them. But then going back to the casino fight scene that you mentioned, Danai Gurira of Walking Dead fame, who played Michonne, coming up in this movie as Okoye. I think she stole every single action sequence that she was in. She was fantastic.
Oh yeah, she was amazing. That wig throw in the casino fight
scene. It was great.
Scene.
It was great. And you set it up like 2 minutes before when she's going, oh my God, this wig sucks. I can't believe I have to wear it. And then she throws it off in the most badass way possible, which is throwing it in some dude's face before she spears him through the legs and throws him overboard.
I mean, let's also talk about her weapon too. I really love that vibranium staff that she has too.
Yeah, I've done a little bow staff in the past, but I think having a spearhead at the end like she has definitely changes the game a little bit. Seeing her swing it around at some points, and with her being surrounded in that particular sequence, it's her versus three or four other guys. Seeing her grab it by the end and then swing it around to buy herself time and buy herself some range to get everyone away from her for a second was really genius.
Yeah, I'm sure like a lot of that sword stuff from The Walking Dead kind of came into play here.
That's a good point. I don't know why I didn't think about that, but that's a really good point.
She's like the badass sword wielder in The Walking Dead. And then here she has a staff. Very, very badass.
And seeing it pop out like that, like a retractable spear, and then it extends
her
hand.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I remember that sequence, though, when they're in the casino where the camera kind of whips up. And what's her name again? Lupita Nyong'o? I want to say, I don't want to completely butcher her name, but yeah, she was like firing the gun up at the balcony. And then I just remember the music there where she's like whipping around the staff and she's like just badass, you know, sequence, just taking on all these guys here.
Yeah, it was great. And then when you have Okoye with the spear jumping off of the balcony, that's when it sort of turns into this pseudo one shot style. Mm-hmm. There's definitely some hidden cuts there, some wipes across the screen, especially when she's jumping off the balcony.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But then you go into a good, like, 60, 90-second sequence of sort of uncut-style action. And yeah. One little thing that I noticed Nakia do once you get on the ground with her and you see her fighting and taking on some guy, she takes off her heel and then uses the end of it to, like, stick a guy in the face.
Oh, right.
And hit him off screen.
That's true. Damn. Good catch.
Yeah, but
another fun fact, too, is that Tyler Whitty, our second guest, is actually in this scene as well.
He is, yeah, you were telling me.
He gets knocked out by Okoye pretty early on with the staff. So, yeah, if you go back to that scene where Okoye is, like, battling all these guys with the staff, you can definitely see him in there.
Yeah, you were telling me that. I missed him, an AFD alum. I need to definitely go back and see if I can pick him out from the crowd.
Oh, yeah, pretty awesome.
And this sequence, there is one thing about the action in this film in general that I wasn't crazy about, and that's the way some of the CGI, some of the animation looks like, especially when you have humanoid characters trying to jump around when they're not in the suit. So the Black Panther full outfit itself can help kind of mask some of the rougher edges, I think, because it's all black, it's all one thing. But when you had Chadwick Boseman in this scene jump from the first floor to the second floor and you can see his face and see his hands and stuff, it looked a little like early 2000s CGI.
Reminded me of the first Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, that's a good... It reminded me of like Spider-Man 1.
Yeah.
When you would see Spider-Man jumping through or something.
Oh, yeah, jumping through the buildings. I recently rewatched that scene where Spider-Man was jumping through the buildings, and I was like, man, I don't remember it looking so, like, CGI.
Yeah.
I just remember it being so badass, like, the first time seeing it.
Yeah, it's like going back and watching Toy Story or something from when we were kids, from our childhoods. Doesn't hold up as well as I thought, but it's still good.
It's still amazing.
Yeah, this film is still functional, definitely still works. Mm-hmm. This leads me to a question I had for you. What did you think about Andy Serkis as Claw?
Oh, dude, I actually thought he was really good. I feel like, is Andy Serkis like a popular sort of like A-list actor, would you say?
I mean, for CG monkeys.
Yeah, exactly.
Then, yeah.
He's known for all these like CGI characters that he plays, but like I feel like he's never really seen on screen, you know, as Andy Serkis.
I didn't realize he was Andy Serkis until I looked it up. Then I'm like, oh no.
Really?
I didn't realize until, because you never see his face unless you're watching behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, I really liked him though in this. I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, I think he did a good job. I do think though, towards the end of his parts in this movie, they made him a little too over the top.
I
think he could have been a little more grounded. I do remember in this, again, in the casino sequence, he takes a shot at Chadwick Boseman at Black Panther, and then it's in a casino, right? So money flies everywhere. And then he laughs. He's like, oh my God, I just made it rain. And then his bodyguards have to grab him and pull him. And I was just thinking to myself,
crazy man.
These bodyguards have such a difficult job. This dude's just running around doing everything. He like does not care. He's taking time to make it rain in this casino. So shout out to the bodyguards in that movie, you know?
He was actually in Age of Ultron.
What was he in Age of Ultron? Was he Ultron?
No, he was like this same character in Age of Ultron.
Oh, Claw was in I haven't seen Age of Ultron.
Oh, okay.
Not yet.
Yeah, he was in there and I rewatched Age of Ultron. I was like, his character is in here. That's
interesting. What Marvel has done is insane with the whole universe and everything.
Yeah, definitely. What'd you think about his handgun?
It was, at first I saw it and I thought, it looks really bad, but then I realized, it's meant to be a prosthetic. It's not supposed to look like a photoreal hand. It is,
he's missing an arm.
That is an extra. It was cool. That's the other thing about this movie. I feel like a lot of the technology for the action sequences, a little underutilized in terms of creativity. So his arm cannon was cool. It was functional. And it really gives the bad guys a fighting chance in some of those sequences, like in the car chase scene that happens in Korea right after the casino scene.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, chase scenes always hard to do to make exciting, especially because you have the characters that are inside the cars having to react to the hits that happen outside the car. So it can be hard to make it exciting and connect you with the characters. But when you have Black Panther on the outside of the car, like sitting on top or something like that, all of a sudden you're connected to the action a lot more immediately. So that was a really smart move, I think. And having him be on top of the car and then pull it to the side as he claws to grab onto the road and basically manually make the car drift. That was really interesting. I wanted to see more stuff like that, to be honest. A little more creativity with the action that was going on here.
Yeah. I think you do make a good point, though, here about the CGI. A lot of these scenes are very CGI heavy, is what I noticed on first watch, especially with the Black Panther suit and everything. You can't really get around that.
Yeah, definitely. And that goes for, you know, Spider-Man 2 and Iron Man. But Iron Man has that advantage because it's a robotic suit. So it makes sense if it's a little plate looking or a little,
right,
sometimes less fluid. Here, it's definitely tough because it's such a forming bodysuit.
Exactly. Yeah. But I really did like that sequence where Okoye, the car blew up and she kind of just goes flying through and then she lands in that piece of that car, the hood.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had a little comedic moment there too.
Oh, when she's skidding in the car seat behind her and she catches up after the rest of the car blew up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was cool. I did like the way she took out one of the cars in front of her when she took her spear as she's standing again on top of the car outside of the vehicle. She throws it through the rear and the front windshield of the car in front of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Plants it into the ground and that acts as a stake to stop the car from moving because it crashes right into it. It reminded me a little bit of the Dark Knight scene when they flip the whole truck over itself.
Yeah. Yeah, except this wasn't like a full like flip, but it was more of like a halt.
Yeah, yeah, definitely more of a halt. It was, again, it was just creative though, which I really liked.
Yeah. I just want to talk one last bit here about that one scene here where Shuri, it's kind of cool how they incorporate her into the scene, especially in this car chase sequence where she's not exactly there, but she's using like a virtual car to try to like
operate it. Yeah, she's like remote controlling it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I found that pretty cool.
Yeah. I like getting her in on the action because she is such a great character. I want to see more of her throughout the rest of the universe. She's witty. She's likable. And she's just a young, down-to-earth person in this universe of gods and mad scientists and stuff like that. A very grounded personality.
Definitely. It's going to be interesting to see how she's going to take over the franchise, at least for Black Panther here.
Yeah, especially as we're phasing away from the other characters, either because of, you know, Iron Man being written out of the universe or because of Chadwick Boseman passing away, seeing what roles are going to be taken up by the younger cast members here or the side characters, things like that.
Yeah. So I think we can move on here to the coronation ceremony fight scene.
Oh, yeah. The waterfall fight scene or Warrior Falls, as it's called.
Yeah. And this is T'Challa versus Killmonger.
And all this death, just so I could kill you. Let the challenge begin.
I think this is way more of an emotional scene than it is like technically like a amazing fight scene, I will say.
Yeah, definitely. And you get that right off the bat when you have Michael B. Jordan or Killmonger. He has the two weapons and he takes one of the spears and just cracks it in half. He's like, this is too long for me.
Yeah.
And just brute force mangles his own weapon before they even start.
Are you noticing any difference here between the fighting styles? I know Killmonger is supposed to be more like ex-US Marines kind of guy, right?
Yeah. And personality-wise, too. He's just... Or not just a little bit. He is very much hot-headed. And one thing I realized performance-wise is matching their characters. Chadwick Boseman, not super expressive in his face when the two of them are talking. But then Michael B. Jordan, his eyebrows are moving. His lips are moving. He is really animating his face to show that anger that he has in his character. And there was one moment in this scene when Killmonger starts to get the momentum going on his side for the fight, where he's just taking the two weapons and just slamming them as if they were a single weapon, just beating down as Black Panther's trying to straight up block and straight up defend. You really see the aggression come out. And of course, this is directly juxtaposed with the earlier Warrior Falls scene when you have Black Panther fighting another rival leader from another tribe in the area. He's the type of person to get him into a chokehold and show mercy and wait for his opponent to tap out. Of course, Michael B. Jordan, Killmonger in this scene, definitely not the kind of guy to do that. he kills two people pretty much in this scene, right? He kills Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, as Forrest Whitaker tries to save Chadwick Boseman's character, T'Challa.
Right.
Yeah.
And not for anything, but later on, you have Black Panther coming back and saying, hey, you didn't kill me, so therefore the ritual battle isn't over. I'm like, I know you're the hero, but that's a major technicality. Like, he threw you off a waterfall, dude. That we need to run back the tape on that one.
What do you think about Killmonger's character here in terms of, like, do you feel for him at this point, especially at this fight scene? Or are you more rooting for a T'Challa here? I feel like the audience is kind of split, but probably more towards T'Challa, I want to say. But I feel like everyone understands, you know, Killmonger's pain.
Yeah, I think I'm honestly more on Killmonger's side than most, partly because Michael B. Jordan's just amazing.
Yeah.
Partly because one thing that really frustrates me about Marvel films is that when you look back at pretty much the movie that kickstarted it, Iron Man, that's a movie with a major theme being the military-industrial complex. So first of all, that is such a grounded theme in terms of modern-day politics and things like that. Second of all, that's a pretty anti-war, anti-violence kind of a theme. And then you have the rest of the Marvel Universe really going to crazy places in space and themes of magic and gods and stuff like that. So we really get away from that very grounded human, again, political element that technically kickstarted all Marvel films. And then here you have Black Panther bringing it back, Black Panther the film bringing it back, and Michael B. Jordan's character Killmonger embodying that so well. And again, talking about this as a cultural icon in terms of Black history, especially, he really is the character that is articulating this idea of solidarity between all groups of Black communities. And he is the one saying that people are suffering around the world in a very real way. Mm-hmm. And one thing I was curious about, what's going to carry on after this film? I guess we kind of answered that. I just haven't seen certain Marvel films that take place after this. Mm-hmm. But of course, the real world problem of Black poverty and person of color poverty, that's obviously not going to get solved in the Marvel version of the universe. Mm-hmm. But when you have a resource like Wakanda's technology and things like that, it's a hard sell to me that they can't go around and really just fix things real quick. So I wonder how that's handled, how that dissonance is handled.
Yeah, I do have to say, though, this film wraps it up pretty nicely.
It does, definitely.
Especially with that message, you know, carrying through.
Yeah, ending with the adult Chadwick Boseman, T'Challa, talking to a young Black boy. And I believe it took place in Oakland, that sequence. That really hit the emotional note exactly the way that it should have. Him talking to the future who need help like that.
Yeah. I think for this sequence, anything else we want to touch on?
For that sequence, I'll also say the water aspect of it.
Oh, right.
That's visually striking. Must have been a pain in the ass for absolutely everyone involved. First of all, the people who had to design the set.
Yeah.
Which had to have some element of water flowing through, and they used a lot of water for that. They built a whole basically side of a cliff in studio. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to, like you said, the special effects, now you have to add more effect, not just effects, but fluid effects on top of that. And then again, you have the performers, the martial artists, who now have to fight in like an ankle or knee deep pool of water. That must make things so difficult to pull off.
The whole water sequence here is, you're right, it does add a lot of complication CGI wise, because I feel like they're definitely using a green screen here in the back, and having water splash in front of that, I can only imagine.
Yeah, crazy stuff. But from an action storytelling perspective, once you have Black Panther getting stabbed and then he's falling down and he's losing this fight, you really get the sense that he's drowning and there is not much he can do and he is completely overwhelmed.
Yeah. Another thing we forgot to mention here as well, Killmonger, when he first takes off his shirt and he has the markings too.
Oh,
That's something that I was like, whoa.
It was pretty badass. And
yeah.
I remember that throne room scene too. Mm-hmm. Again, just a fantastic character all around. But when Killmonger is first entering Wakanda, he gets into the throne room and he's taunting Chadwick Boseman, T'Challa, saying, say my name, you know, ask me who I am, ask me who I am. Mm-hmm. And he won't. And then an elder blurts it out for him and he says, who are you? What's your name? and then he says it in their language, and you have that trap beat come in, that musical, that leitmotif, that musical theme for Killmonger's character. One of the coolest things ever in this entire movie. I think that was a standout scene.
Yeah. I guess we're moving on here to the end, the last fight scene of this movie.
Yeah, it was a multi-tiered sequence, as usually happens in big action blockbusters.
If we're comparing all these three fight scenes, I say this one is definitely the most CGI heavy.
Yeah, and that turned me off. It was not a bad scene. It's just visually, it is very distracting, that because not only are they CGI, you're also in this magnetic train underground world. Mm-hmm. So that seems CGI too. So there's really just nothing real grounding the shots for that sequence.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think Quarter Digital also did an episode on this as well. It's hard to ground yourself into this fight scene just because of where they are, and they're just floating in space, you know, and they're flying down, and then they're going around, and then this magnetic train coming through. They did say, though, that there were a lot of time restrictions on this scene. So this last sequence here actually took 6 weeks.
Okay, to do CGI, you mean, right? In post?
To do the CGI for all of that, yeah. That
seems crazy. Because it takes me like a month to edit a 30-second clip.
Yeah, and just it's crazy to think. Imagine the rendering there and everything.
Oh,
so
my God.
So with all that considered, this is pretty good. I want to say this is pretty good.
That's true. We have come around to sympathize with, man, you're right. Rendering itself must take like a month for these kinds of sequences. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I can only imagine what it took them to do this last sequence here, all the CGI and everything. So,
yeah. So some fun facts about Black Panther. The fighting in this film is based on African martial arts. The filmmakers also cited the action scenes in Creed and the Kingsman films as an influence on the style.
That one takes style. Yeah. And the Kingsman, obviously, wow. That influenced a lot of people for sure. Yeah.
And there was one part in one of the waterfall fight scenes, the one without Killmonger, where T'Challa or Chadwick Boseman, he loses his weapon and he resorts to a little bit of what seems like some pure boxing. And then, of course, in those one-on-one scenes, a bit reminiscent of Creed, being that it's a boxing movie, especially when you had that waterfall fight scene between Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. I think that's where that really shone through. During post-production, editor Debbie Berman told Ryan Coogler that the female Dora Milaje's rescue by the all-male Jabari, in her opinion, undermined the focus of the strong female characters in the film. Coogler agreed, and then they added female Jabari fighters to the scene through additional photography, including the first on-screen Jabari fighter in the scene. Berman felt that this was an important change that might not have been spotted by a male editor. So they're talking about that final sequence when the red-garbed all-female fighters are about to lay down their spears because they're surrounded, and then you have that other tribe come through and save them. Originally, that was all guys, and they diversified a little bit, added some females in there too.
Wow, that's good. It shows the power of having different sets of eyes. Look at your film. Yeah.
And one more I'll give you about that same group of female fighters, the Dora Milaje. They were cast from a pool of actresses, stuntwomen, and Broadway dancers so that each individual Dora could have specialized skills that they brought to the table. The process of finding these women was so long and difficult that people in the casting department humorously dubbed the search Finding Dora.
That's funny. Wow. It's like those little things that you don't even notice.
Yeah, definitely. And while we're on the topic of, in general, you know, minorities and representation and things like that, definitely much harder to find these types of specialized stunt women and dancers, being that you're looking for people of color, just in terms of having that resource in the community to find people like that.
And I think Marvel casting directors, they've been pretty on the nail.
Absolutely, definitely.
I think we could move on here.
I think so, yeah.
To The Last Dragon.
I first heard about The Last Dragon in, like I said before, there was a video by The Guardian on YouTube talking about the intersection between the Black community and then Kung Fu films. And The Last Dragon was a big point of that in that conversation. It's 1985 film directed by Michael Schultz. starring Tomek, or Timok rather, Vanity, Julius J. Carey III. It's a cult classic. It's this over-the-top martial arts comedy film with a largely black cast and crew, and it is a tribute slash almost a parody of Bruce Lee style kung fu films.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can even hear it in the sound effects, especially in this club sequence that we're about to break down.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you see Tai Mok's character. His name is in here Bruce Leroy.
Leroy.
Or at least that's what people call him. And he's just doing his best Bruce Lee impression pretty much the whole film.
Yeah. I thought it was great, though. The movie is very self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
It knows what it
is.
Oh,
definitely.
And it just goes with it. It's very over the top at certain points, but I think that's what makes it amazing.
Yeah. Again, going back to the cultural roots of the crossover between the black community and kung fu films, one of the earliest scenes in this movie is a grindhouse theater scene where it's a bunch of people being loud and rowdy, hanging out with people of all different races and ethnicities. In this theater watching a Bruce Lee film. I think they were watching Enter the Dragon. And
oh yeah,
that's when you also have the introduction of Julius Carey's character, Shonuff. Again, super over the top fights and kicks there. But I really like that nod to sort of the origins of this niche community.
Yeah, I really like that mention to Game of Death here, just because of Shonuff's character being so tall. He's like, what, 6'5" or something?
Oh, that's true. He was a lot bigger.
Yeah, yeah. So it definitely reminded me of that scene.
And his costume, just completely over the top.
Yeah.
Julius's performance, completely over the top.
He reminded me of a Power Ranger.
It did, yeah. He was so obviously wearing red football pads on his shoulders, but it just worked. The whole thing worked. It was great.
Yeah, and he had some great lines in here too.
Oh my God, everything he says. He said, "Who's the master? Who's the master?"
Yeah.
And how his cronies, his gang has a whole rhyming like response memorized and they say it in unison.
Yeah. And now this club fight sequence that we want to touch upon here, where he's walking in and then you have the giant TV's projections behind him of that mouth.
Hey, Leroy! That was almost worth the price of admission in there! And the featured act is yet to come! Come on, Leroy!
There is this dude, I forget what his name is, but he's sort of like the corporate bad guy in this to Shonuff's, you know, very physical bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy who sort of orchestrates this whole scene. And you have our hero, Bruce Leroy, coming in, having to fight 5, 6, 7, 8 dudes at a time as sort of round one of this final long extended action sequence for the final act of this movie. You see him again, super Bruce Lee moves, throwing out these kicks, spinning kicks, quick punches, very nimble fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And we should mention too that Timok, who plays Bruce Leroy, was a martial artist in his own right. He was a karate black belt before doing this film. So all that stuff that you see, I'm pretty sure it was all him.
Yeah.
If it were all kicks and punches, that would be him doing
that.
Did
he do the coordination for this?
I don't know if he did the coordination, but I'm sure he played a big part in it.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk here about that little kid too that comes in midway throughout this fight. I think he says Goliath kind of takes down Timok here, and then that's when all these guys come in to save him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. So yeah, so there's Bruce Leroy, there's another Asian gentleman who is smaller than him, and then there's another Asian kid who is a little kid in this fight scene, and those are sort of your three focal points for this part of the action. And they come through with some comedy here. You have this little tiny kid shooting basically a blast double leg at this, you know, adult male. But because the little kid is so small, he basically ends up just headbutting the dude in the crotch.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty solid strategy. You know, you're yeah. short, you're already down there.
It's a pretty talented kid, man.
Yeah, honestly.
He did all the Bruce Lee stuff too.
He did.
His impression
yeah.
was pretty spot on.
All good stuff. And then, of course, after this sequence, we're going into eventually that one-on-one final fight scene between Bruce Leroy and Shonuff
yeah.
with the iconic glowing sequence. So before in the movie, you set up that a true master will basically glow when they've achieved their final power and their final level. And then after this fight scene starts to get underway, eventually we see Shonuff sure enough, starts glowing red with power. Beating down on Bruce Leroy here.
Yeah, I love his entrance here. Where sure enough kind of comes in and he just spins what is it called? The garage?
A garage, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, you ready yet?
Yeah. Again, such an over-the-top character. And then, of course, we're ending with Bruce Leroy completing his character arc, really finding the confidence in himself to find his own glow. And then he glows in this iconic yellow.
Yeah.
And once he achieves that final form, you have him waving his arms around a la Fist of Fury, Bruce Lee, with this, you know, trippy effect on his arms as he's waving them in circles. Then he's able to fight back against our guy, Shonuff. This is another one where even, you know, Black Panther, I feel like I was more a Killmonger fan than I was a Black Panther fan. Mm. And here I have to say, I think I'm more of a Shonuff fan than I am anyone else in this movie. He's just,
he steals the show, man.
He's such a huge character. He's so much larger than life here.
Yeah.
I also have some fun facts for this movie.
Okay, let's hear them.
I'll run you through. So during the introductory training sequence, Bruce Leroy karate chops an arrow as it soars past him. This was a real stunt that took 2 hours of takes to get right.
Damn.
Which is crazy.
So they actually had the time for that. They Jackie Chan'd that.
They did. Yeah. They Jackie Chan'd it. They Stanley Kubrick'd it. How many takes they took.
Yeah. I definitely want to mention here in this scene, this last scene, they use a lot of suspense here to their advantage. So we have that door sequence where... Where he kind of kicks Shonuff through the door. Leroy kicks Shonuff through the door. And then Shonuff's on the floor. He's like twitching. Then he looks away. He calls out his name. And then he turns around and he's just gone.
Super dramatic. And you really do see on Bruce Leroy's face, like... He didn't just sell it as, oh, now I'm back in fighting mode. He sold it as, oh my God, I thought this was over. Now I'm being dragged back into this again. He really had that concern on his face.
Yeah. And I love the classic flashback to your master, flashback to those crucial moments.
Oh, yeah. As his
great Karate Kid-like.
Yeah. And in a water-related incident there where he's kind of getting drowned by Shonuff. And of course, water in general is huge in storytelling. It signals some sort of transformation or rebirth or whatever. But in the Bruce Lee martial arts context, water is even more significant with the whole be water bit. Fantastic. Another thing I wanted to mention, I guess this is also like a trivia fun fact thing. The dude who played Bruce Leroy, Tai Mok, was, of course, a big karate guy before this movie, but this was actually his first acting job. He had no acting experience before. He actually thought he was going in to the audition to perform karate, so he brought his gi and everything. Then he realized it was an actual audition, and he totally blew it. So then he had to go back and work with his dad, who was not an actor, try to get the audition stuff down, went back a month later, asked for another shot, and then got it basically immediately after that.
It's good, though. He's a very stoic character in this.
Yeah, he sells it well. And it's comedy, too. And I always say comedy scares me to have to try to make people laugh. And he does it pretty well. And on the flip side, Julius Carey, who played Shonuff, was an actor, but he had no martial arts experience.
Ah, I see.
So true opposites. And I think he... pulled it off really well. We see all the time, and it sticks out like a sore thumb when you have non-martial artist actors trying to do kicks and stuff like that. But Julius really carried it here.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
And very over-the-top movements, but man, totally. That's what's great about this.
I think that probably helped him too, because he's such a big, intimidating character. That means he's throwing less punches. He's just doing really big, heavy ones. And that probably helped his, you know, non-martial artist experience sort of get hidden by him being able to take his time and even do simpler movements usually when he's just throwing a sort of traditional punch as opposed to Bruce Leroy here who's doing jump kicks and stuff like that.
Yeah, this looked like a really fun movie to make. I'm surprised. I feel like there were more memes from this, or there would have been more memes from this movie.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's just criminally... I won't say underrated because people who know about it really rave about it. It is a cult classic, but it's just underexposed. Like people don't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really is a cultural touchstone here. This came out really the only other big black action star was Jim Kelly in the United States before this in the 70s, and this movie came out in the 80s. So it really was a huge turning point. Mm-hmm. And Jim Kelly, actually someone who they wanted and who was considered for the role of Shonuff, I would have been very interested to see that version of the movie. Of course, because Jim Kelly is such a decorated martial artist and action movie legend himself. I will say, though, I don't know if his acting could have been as over the top and as iconic as Julius J. Carey here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Julius J. Carey really makes this scene and this whole movie in general.
I'll give one more little bit here that really confused me and made me laugh. His little sister, Bruce Leroy's little sister, he calls a little sister Lotus Blossom, which I'm like, okay, it's a cute nickname, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the dad calls her Sophia. So then I'm thinking, okay, Sophia is the little sister's actual name. But then the mom calls her Natasha. So it's like, do they not know what name their child has? And it's
They know her for different things.
It's crazy because it's not like a slip up in the script. The little brother character points it out. He's like, you people don't know what to call your own child. And then they just never address it again.
Maybe that was like a production thing. And they were like, oh yeah, we forgot about this, but let's work it into the script somehow.
Yeah, exactly. If they couldn't remember, and then they're like, yeah, just make it a plot point.
Yeah. We need to have this thing just to make sure that makes sense.
Yeah. The song Rhythm of the Night went to number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 and number 1 on the Billboard R&B charts from this movie. I saw this movie, the song Rhythm of the Night comes on. I'm like, okay, they use an iconic, you know, a great pop disco song for this, right? Or an R&B song. Turns out, no, this song came from this film, which I had no idea about.
I guess in this case, we can move on to Django.
Django Unchained, released in 2012, directed by Quentin Tarantino, starring Jamie Foxx, Christoph Waltz, Samuel L. Jackson, and Leonardo DiCaprio. One huge, huge scene in this film that everyone points to is that Candyland shootout.
The Candyland shootout sequence, which is iconic. It's a legendary sequence in this movie.
You really want me to shake your hand? I insist. If you insist...
The very, very beginning of this sequence, how it starts, I think it's very unexpected, but I feel like this sequence almost like would not have happened if it weren't for Christoph Waltz's character here.
Oh, absolutely.
Pulling out the handgun, shooting Leonardo DiCaprio right in the chest.
Taxi driver gun.
Right into the flower. It's like perfect. The sound effect too and everything works so well.
Yeah, definitely. It was an understated gunshot too. It sounded like a little cap gun or something. And then like, you have...
And then he just died, and that was it.
Yeah, and I love how it sort of implies that the shot lands right on the flower that's on Leonardo DiCaprio's lapel. Mm-hmm. And then you see the stark red blood flowing from the white flower.
That was perfect.
Really good
great
stuff.
Great shot by Christoph Waltz here.
And
I think the shotgun blast that blows him away is just so like big in comparison to that gunshot.
Absolutely.
Where it just blows him away, like straight into the bookcase.
And you see the papers from behind him fluttering down and getting shredded from the library right behind him.
Yeah.
From that single shotgun shell. It was great.
This sequence right here, though, was one of the ones that I was able to recreate with some of my friends, too.
So oh, really?
I did. Yeah, it was really fun. And I learned a lot about the camera movement here and how Quentin Tarantino uses these zooms. This movie a lot, just like in lens, you know, zoom ins, as you can see here. I think with Leonardo DiCaprio's face and them zooming into the butler in the scene played by Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Great effect as well. Camera work is amazing. You can also see here the moment when Jamie Foxx kind of realizes is like, oh shit, it's going down.
That's another great point because up until this point, I think. You have those three star actors, Christoph Waltz, Sam Jackson, Leonardo DiCaprio, really stealing the show, stealing every single scene that they're in. And then here where you have all three of them in the same scene, there is just, it's so much personality and so much great acting going on. Mm-hmm. And then at this point, two of those characters are blown away. And then when we're kicking off the third act here, this is where Jamie Foxx, where Django really comes into his own as a character and really becomes a star of the show. And I'd say probably like 50% of his lines happen from here on into the end of the movie in the last 20 minutes. It's where show everything that he's learned.
This is a huge turning point then.
Absolutely.
I also really enjoy here where he sort of just takes random dudes who he's already like shot once and he uses them as like a shield so he can move around the place.
It is. And even another comedic element is when the guys are first coming through the door and they get shot, they're just standing normally. Like they're not expecting him to be right there,
like,
and then
jelly
you just get
beans,
blown away.
Dude.
Yeah, it's great. I also love that because they're using revolvers, he's not stopping to reload. He's stopping to get guns from other people's bodies that he's already shot.
Especially another thing I noticed with the blood work here as well, bullets just flying through multiple people at the same time. Camera, you know, just follows bullets too, you know. That's something that I found really interesting as well.
This is the first Tarantino film I've seen and still probably my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I really love with Tarantino here, actually, how he just builds up these sequences and he spends so much time and you're kind of like expecting this one thing to happen. And then it all just, it's done. You know, he just
shoots in like 5 seconds. I also wonder how Quentin Tarantino chooses which characters he wants to cameo as. Because, of course, in Pulp Fiction, he's sort of this quick talking dude in charge where he's disparaging our main characters in that film. This one's total opposite. He doesn't just get shot. He gets blown up with his own dynamite.
Yeah. There were only a couple options here where he could really shine as a cameo.
That's true.
I really liked the comedy when he comes back to Candyland and you have the whole like, bye, Miss Laura scene. That's like iconic.
Yeah, standout moment in this film.
She like defies all laws of gravity and just flies to the side.
Straight back, yeah.
Yeah, straight back.
So obviously she's rigged up to something.
Yeah.
I wonder if she must be a stuntwoman then, right? Because it's such a small part.
She could be.
We're going to get her on the show and I'm going to ask just that one question. What was it like?
Are you a stuntwoman? Yeah. What was it like getting like pulled back there?
and then we say, yeah, can you just say bye, Miss Laura for us?
Yeah, can you say bye, Miss Laura? Oh, wait. Another amazing performance I think we missed out I'm talking about here is Billy Cash. Billy Cash, I thought, was pretty good. He was kind of like a very hated character here.
He definitely was.
Almost slicing off
Django's Django. Almost
yeah,
got
Django's
cut here.
Django. Yeah. Very, very uncomfortable scene there.
Oh, yeah.
But I really like how they came full circle at the end there and he just shot him. When Quentin Tarantino was writing this, he was talking about what about like a black Western hero? Because I feel like, you know, we had a bunch of other Western heroes, but I feel like black people don't have their Western hero, you know?
That's true.
So this kind of really gave them that hero, Django, in a very badass way. And I thought it was amazing.
It was. And one thing that really sticks out to me about this movie is how it treats violence and how it really does both ends of the spectrum really well. So in the certain parts of this movie, you're seeing violence done onto slaves that are happening on this 1800s farm ranch owned by the evil Mr. Candy, Leonardo DiCaprio. And in those scenes, violence is meant to be disturbing and harrowing, and you want it to stop. But then later on, in this scene in particular, in that shootout scene, you play up the violence in a very different way, in a very comedic way, in a very over-the-top way. And you have those squibs attached to these people who are being shot in some of the reddest blood you're ever going to see, in some of the tallest squib heights you're going to see. They get shot and then their insides just come out and all over the walls.
It's definitely the most exaggerated, but probably one of the best blood work squib sequences I've ever seen.
Yeah, and especially after watching something like Black Panther, seeing the practicality in that sequence, as in the practical effects, very, very refreshing.
I would say, back to your point before about how, you know, you kind of just want this violence to stop. I also think that there's a sort of cathartic side to that violence where when you see the slave owners here get what they deserve.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point. Catharsis is definitely a word I associate with Quentin Tarantino, especially in something like Inglourious Basterds. I feel like that movie's all just a series of sequences, building stuff up and then catharsis. But yeah, you're right. This scene, hearing them scream racial slurs in the middle of this firefight definitely just adds fuel to that fire where you're like, yeah, you're about to get shot and it's going to be amazing. And then also it doesn't just take this scene as straight up shoot and then get shot. There's some interesting choreography and things like that going on here as well. You have one of the best parts of the sequence is some dude gets shot and falls in the middle of the floor, but then he's not dead. And he's just complaining and screaming throughout a good like minute straight of the sequence.
and then the funny part is the other people just keep shooting him by accident.
Yeah. It's not to be honest, it's not like he's near the person they're trying to shoot. He's like right in front of them, down on the ground, and somehow he's still getting shot by his own guys.
Yeah.
The notoriously famous shootout between Django and Calvin Candy's henchmen was not written in the final script. Instead, he and Brumhilda were immediately captured after Dr. Schultz's demise. Which is crazy. The whole half of our conversation almost did not happen and was not part of the script.
Wow, that was like the most amazing part of the movie. That's crazy.
It was.
It's kind of like Rogue One, where they put that Darth Vader sequence at the end and everyone was just like, dude, that was like the best part of the movie. And then it almost did not happen. It was like filmed like after they were done filming the whole thing. And they're like, we just need a Darth Vader sequence right now. Put that sequence in. It's the most amazing thing ever.
You could probably say that for any film. Like, you just need a little more Darth Vader and that would make it that much better. And you're still in the third act. In an interview, Tarantino said that originally the Mandingo fight scene, where he's making the slaves fight each other,
the scenes with the dogs
were longer and more violent. But then he said he felt like he was going to traumatize the audience, so he cut both scenes down. Possibly a good call. I'd say that's probably a good call.
Yeah, those are pretty brutal sequences there.
Yeah, they definitely get the job done.
I didn't even talk about the sound effects, but the Mandingo fight scene, man, dude.
Oh, it's brutal.
Those sound effects are so brutal. It literally makes that sequence so much more gruesome.
Yeah, and juxtaposing that they're shirtless, they're sweaty, and they're obviously killing each other in that very fine dining room. Crazy, crazy effective on Tarantino's part.
What a contrast, juxtaposition there.
And one more fun fact here. Christoph Waltz turned down the role when he was first given the script. He felt it was too tailored to his persona, his own personal persona. Tarantino insisted and couldn't take no for an answer. So Waltz agreed with one condition. His character had to be pure and never once act in a negative or evil manner.
Ah, I see. So was he tired of playing bad guys?
Yeah, or at least guys with that overt bad or negative slant to them. Christoph Waltz, crazy that he's the one that made that suggestion, because I feel like that character choice is a huge component of what really makes this movie work.
Yeah, I thought this was amazingly casted.
Absolutely. Although, again, to be fair, if I could cast Sam Jackson, Christoph Waltz, and Leonardo DiCaprio in just about any of my roles,
in anything, it would be great.
I'd be like, perfect cast.
Yep.
So that about wraps up our breakdowns for Black Panther, for Last Dragon, and for Django Unchained, our Black History Month special. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in a week where we kind of wanted to take time and just gush about some of our favorite films. That also ties into the Heritage Month that we got going on this month.
Yeah, it was really cool breaking down some of these films and actually seeing The Last Dragon here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hidden gem that I didn't even know about.
Yes, it's fantastic. Please check it out. If you need incentive, just search up Show Enough, and then that will convince you.
Watch some clips of Show Enough on YouTube.
Absolutely. Compared to other episodes too, we're always analyzing these scenes, trying to find out what questions to ask. Here it was an interesting change of pace, just saying our thoughts outright and not worrying about what questions we can spin off of that.
Yeah, and also one quick thing, let us know if you want to hear more about these breakdowns that we're doing.
So again, thank you everyone for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week, same time, same place.